Teasing, exclusion, gossiping, threats. These are all weapons that young women can employ against each other with devastating results. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Bullies can come in all shapes, sizes, and genders, but today we're going to focus on a very specific and common kind of bullying, girl-on-girl bullying. Some people call it relational aggression or emotional bullying. My guests today are no strangers to this kind of behavior. Together, they have founded an organization called A Way Through to help parents, educators, and girls put a stop to this kind of bullying. Jane Ballvance was an elementary school guidance counselor, and Blair Wagner was moved to do something about this problem when her third-grade daughter became the target of this kind of abuse. Later on, we'll talk about the importance of forgiveness. Please join our conversation with your experiences after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Charity Nebbe. Having a friend turn on you can be devastating. A girl that it happens to can go from loving school to hating school, from feeling good about herself to losing her confidence, from loving life to wishing it were over. Today we're going to talk about the very common problem of female bullying, sometimes called relational aggression or emotional bullying. And my first guests today are the founders of an organization called A Way Through to help parents, educators, and girls put a stop to this kind of bullying. Jane Ballvance spent many years as an elementary school guidance counselor, and Blair Wagner was moved to do something about this problem when her third-grade daughter became the target of this kind of abuse. She's a professional life coach, speaker, and certified law of attraction practitioner. And we'd love to have you join our conversation as well today. I know that many of you have had experiences with this kind of bullying, either personally or with your children. And if you'd like to share your experiences, please give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Jane, I want to start with you. I know a lot of people listening right now are thinking, well, bullying is a problem for a lot of people, boys, girls, everyone has problems with this. Why would we spend an hour talking about female bullying in particular? And why do you think it is important to single out this kind of a problem?
Well, because usually girls fight through relational aggression. Girls are very much connectors, and they fight in a different way than boys, although boys can use relational aggression too. So I think to narrow it down is a really, really good idea to start with, because it is such a big problem. And when you work with girls and try to figure this out, I kind of liken it to walking in a clear stream. And then the more people that get in the stream, the muddier and the muddier and the murkier it gets. And so it's really just hard to get to the root of the matter with girls. I think when relational aggression is resolved with girls, they can concentrate on more things, you know, their schoolwork, fun things. So that's why I say let's start with girls in this point.
Well, and can you define relational aggression for me?
Sure. It's using a relationship to hurt another person. So we're in a trio right here. Blair's here, you're here, I'm here. Both of us could get together against you, and we have a relationship. We would use our relationship to hurt you. You and I could have a relationship, and it could go both ways. So it's relational in nature. That's why it's called emotional or relational aggression. It's also called emotional bullying too.
Well, Blair, it was an experience with your daughter that really got you started on this project. So maybe could you tell us what happened to your daughter?
Sure. My daughter, Libby, when she was in third grade, had experienced relational aggression. At the time, I had never heard that term, and I had no idea what that meant. But basically what had happened is she had had a best friend, or a BFF, as girls that age like to think of it. And they had been best friends for a couple of years. And everything had gone all right, and then things started changing in third grade. And the other girl started pulling away. And what happened was Libby would get the silent treatment. So one day everything was fine, and then the next day all of a sudden she would get ignored as if she weren't there. And then other girls started joining in. And so it was kind of a group of girls. And Libby was lost in that. She wasn't equipped with how to handle that. And she didn't understand what happened. And what she started doing was blaming herself. Inside, she knew that something was internally, something was wrong with her. That was the reason that the girls were doing this. They were using exclusion, the silent treatment. They would do things to her locker. Some days she could sit with them at lunch, and some days she wasn't allowed to sit with them at lunch. And this went on for months. And she spent a lot of her time at school sitting in the hall crying. And I was volunteering in the school quite a bit at the time, and so I was sitting with her quite a bit. I would walk with her to lunch, and I was just, as a parent, I was just overwhelmed by the whole thing. I had no idea what to do. And every night I would tuck her in at bed, and she would close her eyes and go to sleep with a tear in her eye. Every morning when I would wake her up, and as she would look at me, when she realized it was a school day and she had to go to school, she would start the day with a tear. And this went on for a long time. I finally got to the point where one night I tucked her in bed at night, and she looked at me and she said, "Mom, I'm going to pray for God to take me away." And I still get choked up, even though it was years ago, when I think about it. And that was a real turning point for us. And it was, to be honest, physically, it was like a kick in the gut. I had no idea what to do. It was a very strong feeling of helplessness, and it was really tough. And so what happened is I ended up connecting with Jane, and we hooked up together. And Jane started a book study for parents, and that grew, and the demand was there. So we did a movie night at our school. And we were just amazed by how much help people wanted. And so together, and Jane had been working with us for a long time. And so we ended up doing a series of workshops in our school, and we called it the 7 Series. And so the next school year, we held a parent-daughter workshop once a month. And it was awesome because so many people showed up, and the support was immense, and the need was really huge. And Jane looked at me after one, I'll never forget that day, and she said, "We need to write a book." And I was like, whoa. And so we did. So we wrote a book that turned into a whole curriculum, turned into a whole business. I remember as things started growing, circling back to Libby would, we ended up getting help for her also, counseling, and that was really helpful. By the time she was in fifth grade, she was slowly starting to get a better sense of herself. And as we were doing these workshops, she would sit along the side and just kind of watch. She didn't really want to participate a lot. And finally, when Libby was in, got to the point where Libby was in sixth grade, and Jane and I were on TV for the first time, and she came up to me. She said, "Mom, I really want to help with this one." And I looked at her. I'm thinking, okay, could you have picked a different one to do your debut on? So I said, okay. So Jane and I talked about it, and she helped. And at the end of that workshop, she came forward, and she took the microphone, and she fielded questions from little first and second graders who were asking, "What do you do when your friends won't play with you at recess?" And she was answering the questions as best she could, and she had come to the point where she knew at that point she had a better sense of who she is and that who she wants to be with and what kind of friendship she wants. It took a while. It was a while in the coming, but she really got there. And now she's in high school, and she has an awesome group of friends. She recognizes in different activities she sees relational aggression, but she just tunes out what she doesn't want to be a part of, and she's learned how to have a better group of friends that are supportive of her.
Well, let's talk about, you know, of course, with any group of friends, and particularly with little girls, there are always going to be problems, you know, mm-hmm. small problems. And people have disagreements, and people say things that aren't nice sometimes. At what point, as a parent, does your radar need to go off and say, wait a minute, this is going beyond normal. This is something we need to really be paying attention to. Jane?
Yeah. I think it's just at the exact time when your gut tells you to. Like you had said, when you feel like this has gone beyond. And that's the time to start in. But you're already past preventative care at that time. You're going into some kind of tertiary care where something needs to be done, some kind of intervention. One of the things that would really help is starting with some preventative care. When kids are really, really, really little, you know, younger than younger than kindergarten, preschool.
Well, I want to talk about some of the signs that we see, and then we can go on to talk about dealing with it and the preventative care as well. But you guys have identified something that you call friendship weapons, and these are the things that girls use to hurt their friends. And so can you give me some examples of what these weapons are?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Some of the most common ones are exclusion, gossip, name-calling, teasing. Those are some of the more common friendship weapons. And what we tell parents is the main message that we give for parents is that it's not your problem to solve. And that's really hard for them to hear oftentimes. So it's tricky because you want parents to be advocates for their children and to learn how to do that. Oftentimes what that means is staying behind the scenes, coaching your daughter behind the scenes, giving them tools, practicing scenarios, doing role playing, and then letting the girl solve her own problem. I didn't know any of that at the time. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the biggest things that is helpful for parents to know.
Okay, so there are usually more people involved in this also than just the bully or the person who is using these friendship weapons and the target. Mm-hmm. What about the other girls involved in these groups? What is their role?
Okay, they're the bystanders. And we've identified several different types of bystanders. The bystander that you would want to have, the bystander can have a great big impact on this, and that would be your positive, active bystander, the one who will step forward and say, hey, stop it, or if it's unsafe, go tell a teacher or get an adult. Sometimes bystanders who aren't positive will take a role that encourages the bullying to continue, and that's simply by being around.
Being the audience.
Yeah, yeah. And there's different ways to be the audience. For example, the peacekeeper bystander is one who always tries to get in the middle of it. And her job, so she thinks, is to keep the peace. And so by keeping the peace, you know, I'll play with you this time and then I'll play with you this time. What she actively does is encourages the problem to go on, because the girls having the problem don't have to solve it. The peacekeeper bystander will solve it for her. Whereas the ice cube bystander, she just, you know, she stands there and she laughs, and basically just because she thinks it's funny. Those are unhelpful types.
Well, we'll talk about ways to deal with this problem in just a moment. My guests today are Jane Ballvance, who spent many years as an elementary school guidance counselor, and Blair Wagner. They are the co-founders of a group called A Way Through. You can read more about the group on their website, awaythrough.com. We're talking about female bullying, relational aggression, emotional bullying today. And we'd love to hear your stories as well. Or if you have questions for my guests, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about the problem of female bullying, friendship bullying. It's called emotional bullying or relational aggression. And in a little while, we're going to be talking about the importance of forgiveness in this kind of bullying and in other kinds of bullying as well. But first, we're talking about the problem and how to deal with the problem. A lot of us have experienced it. A lot of us have had daughters who have experienced it, and we'd love to hear your stories. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guests right now are the co-founders of an organization called A Way Through, and you can find more information about their organization on the website awaythrough.com. Jane Ballvance spent many years as an elementary school guidance counselor. Blair Wagner is a professional life coach, and she was moved to get involved with this because her daughter was experiencing problems. And we had touched a little bit on preventative. And, you know, for a lot of people who run into this kind of problem, it's too late for for dealing with the prevention. But if you have a daughter and you want to help her have healthy friendships and not get into this kind of situation, what do you do?
watch yourself. Watch what kind of role model you are, because it's a lot of little subtle things we do. For example, talking on the phone. What does your daughter hear you saying? Kids pick that up, and you know that is probably the A number one, because little kids look to their parents for this type of support. Or what am I going to do? I want to be like mom when I grow up, and mom acts like this.
So what kinds of behavior should you be modeling?
I would say to be honest, one of those things. Another would be to watch your words, because once they come out, they can't be taken back. Watch your phone conversations. That's one of those places where the little girls listen a lot. Watch how you're talking to a group of women, or this happens with men too. Just watch how the role model that you're being with that one.
Do you have anything to add, Blair?
Yeah, I think it's really important to have conversation with your children. I tend to be very transparent with my kids, and my children now, one is in junior high, a seventh grader and a 10th grader. And I like to share with them what I observe. So if we're shopping and I notice relational aggression, or if I notice something, we talk about it. And if I notice a feeling that I have, or something that I even that I don't like in myself, I'll comment on it. So my way of doing it is to be very transparent. Your other question about what do you do when it happens, where your daughter comes home and it's bad, and it's bad right now, and what do you do? The first thing that Jane and I teach that I think is so important is for parents to take a breath. And the very first thing is to get grounded yourself and to separate your own emotional response from what's going on with your daughter. That's number one. And the way to do that is just to take a breath and to stop and listen and consciously set your own reaction aside. Oftentimes what we have is parents who will, oh, that's terrible. I can't believe she did that. And then the first thing is, I'll call her mother. That's the very first thing. One of the concepts that Jane has introduced that I found so inspirational, and it has been really helpful with a lot of the parents that we work, is neutral talk. And that is talking without an emotional response. So when your daughter comes home and lays out a problem, have your response be very neutral. It doesn't mean it's uncaring, but it's very neutral. Oh, really? So tell me more about that. And then what happened? What was it like when she blah, 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 whatever it is? Questions like that, because it sets a calm atmosphere in the conversation, and it enables the girl to slow down and really look at what's going on. Then once you can get past that and do the listening, then you can talk about what are the strategies. And we like to teach very simple strategies, and they're very specific to the different friendship weapons. And role-playing is great. I know this sounds weird, but when we're teaching, I like to tell when we're doing parent seminars, at home, bully your kids. It's great because you can have a lot of fun with that. So say, for example, your daughter comes home and she says, they won't let me sit with them at lunch. And you've talked through what the strategy is she wants to do. She's either going to speak up, or she's going to go sit with someone else, or whatever it is. So at home, you might, when you're setting the table, set one place short. So and she knows about this. So you're doing this together, and you're doing it in practicing in a safe environment where it's almost fun. And she gets to practice speaking up. So she might come up to you and say, I don't like it when you don't set the table for me. I want to sit with the family. Practicing that, practicing, practicing, that's the biggest thing. And practicing at home in a safe environment. So when then they go to school or to their activity or sport, wherever it is that it's happening, they've practiced it with other people who are caring. Another place is to practice it in front of a mirror. So those are some of the things that we encourage, is kind of role-playing and practicing. But the initial response is calm down yourself.
And when you were just doing the role-playing there, I heard an old friend of mine is the daughter of an elementary school counselor, the I message.
Yeah.
And Tell us about I messages. I'm sure we all learned about them in elementary school, mm-hmm. but a lot of us have probably forgotten. What is an I message, and why is it so important to help your child learn to use them?
Okay. An I message is a message where you take responsibility. For example, if I am angry at you, I could say, you made me mad. Charity, you made me mad. You caused me to do this. My responsibility with an I message is to say, I feel mad. the traditional setup is when you, and then you name the action, when you don't listen to me, I feel, and the kids fill in the blank, I feel upset because I feel like I don't count. And then the last part is, what do you want? What do you want to have happen? I want you to listen. So that's an I message. Now, that works pretty well for third, fourth, and sometimes fifth graders. Try to get a sixth grader to say an I message like that. That doesn't work so much. So what we liked, what Blair and I like to teach is, I want you to stop. Don't do that. Quit that. I don't want you to tell secrets about me. And those are I messages of the shortened form.
Maureen is on the line from Des Moines, the mother of three girls. Hi, Maureen. Hi, Maureen. Are you there?
Hi. Yes.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
I raised three daughters. They're all out of college now. And we witnessed, I guess, as a lot of bullying and a lot of situations you're talking about. I guess I have an observation and a question. What my girls experienced a lot of times were, they were never really active participants. A couple of them were the type that would stick up for a friend and get in the middle of it. My third daughter more observed it and stayed friends with the girl that was being bullied but wasn't going to get in the middle of it. And I noticed that by the time they got to be about sophomores in high school and everybody grew up a little bit, the kids stopped following the bullies and realized that, you know, hey, maybe I don't want to be friends with people that act like that. And that's just kind of an observation where I saw the whole group dynamic with all three girls kind of grow out of it as they got older. But my frustration was when all this was going on is it's so hard to get through to the parents of the girl doing the bullying. Nobody wants to believe it's their child. And I thought maybe your panel here could give parents some suggestions on how to talk with the other parents in these group dynamics to figure out how to get through to the parents of the child that's really kind of the instigator.
That's a great question, Maureen. Yeah, that's a great question because I'm sure a lot of parents want to be able to do that. And Blair, what can you do at that point?
It's interesting. We have a free mini audio on our website. It's called 9 Mistakes Parents Make When Their Daughter is Suffering from Hurtful Friendships. And calling or talking to the other parent is one of the key mistakes. And it's one of the most common things. It's what most people want to do. And as we're hearing here, it's frustrating because they oftentimes are not open. They're not open to hearing it and to working it out. The reason that we suggest not to do that, there are two reasons. One is that it doesn't work. And two is what message are you sending your daughter when you basically are shoving her aside and you're stepping forward and you're going to the other parent to try to solve the problem? You're telling your daughter, I'm here to solve your problems for you. And that isn't a long-term strategy that's going to be helpful for her.
Right. Even if it works in the short term,
yeah,
it doesn't help
yeah.
her in the long term.
And most often we find it does not work. There are exceptions where the other parent, you have a close relationship with them and you've discussed or worked on this type of thing before. In our experience, most of the times it doesn't work, and that's why we recommend not doing it. Instead, work with your daughter, and if you need other advocates for your daughter, talk to, if it's at a sports, in a sporting event, talk to the coach. If it's at school, talk to the teacher. You know, have other advocates there. We're not saying, you know, never talk to an adult. We have found, though, that most of the time, talking to the other parent of the girl who's bullying does not work.
Okay, so let's talk about things that do work. Mm-hmm. And in looking through all of your materials, it seems to me that your biggest goal is not to solve this one problem, but your biggest goal is to teach a girl how to be a good friend herself and how to seek out healthy friendships.
That's exactly it. I know Jane and I are a little bit weird on this, but we look at relational aggression. When it happens in a minor form, it's actually a beautiful opportunity for a girl. I know that sounds weird because everything you hear now is anti-bullying. And while we certainly don't want girls to be in pain and we don't want rampant bullying going on, life happens. And in life, throughout, even as adults, we run into people who are not kind. And so it's really helpful for girls when they experience it in a minor way when they're young and they have adults who don't get all wigged out. Instead, they're calmly go, wow, I can see how that would really be hurtful, and have that conversation. And then, again, look at what are the strategies? What are you going to do? And offer them strategies. Let them choose. It's all about having them be independent problem solvers.
Now, one of the things that you focus on, and as I had a personal experience like this when I was in fifth and sixth grade myself, and this is how I ended up working my way out of it. Of course, you look for other friends, mm-hmm. and as you choose your friends throughout life, you choose people who don't do this kind of thing. And if they mm-hmm. try to do it to someone else, you tell them you don't like it, and you don't get close to that person,
right.
because that's a person who could hurt you as well. And that's a strategy that I used all the way through junior high and high school and college. And then suddenly in the real world, I realized that it doesn't work as well anymore, because suddenly you are in workplaces with mm-hmm. people, and some people, you know, even as adults, continue to employ these kind of friendship weapons. Mm-hmm. And suddenly these are people you have to work with on a daily basis. So do you also try to help prepare girls for that, for having tools to deal with it when they can't get out of the situation?
Right. We offer 12 different strategies that girls can choose from. And speaking to what you just talked about, I would suggest speak up, which a lot of girls don't want to do. And we have a little formula for speaking up and dealing with relational aggression. It's called the 3 D's. And the way that you speak up, you have to have dignity for yourself. Like you can't be a wimp or simpering or, you know, a big bully yourself. You have to present yourself with dignity, meaning I feel okay about myself, how I'm presenting this. I have to offer dignity to you. That means you might not feel dignified, but I can't back you into a corner. So I offer you the opportunity to have dignity. And the 3rd D is diffuse the situation. So that's the goal, diffusing. The 4th is detach. And that's not part of the 3 D's yet.
So I have to ask, this is something you hear people talk about quite a lot, and it has made its way into popular culture with, you know, mm-hmm. different characterizations, not nearly as subtle as the kind of relationships we're talking about today. You see the popular pretty mean girls picking on the nerdy girl, and mm-hmm. things like that do happen. But the kind of relational bullying that you're talking about sounds a little less splashy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it doesn't make movies quite as much fun, I guess. But a lot of people say, this seems to be happening younger and younger. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that. Is this happening to younger children, Jane?
Absolutely. And we're paying attention to it now. But I believe it's been happening since the beginning of time. There's been some research done by Nikki Crick, and she said that at about age 2.5 years old is when she first recognized this in children. So that's in the research. You'll just notice it as a parent yourself. As soon as your children get friends, that's the time where relational aggression can start. So yes, it does start young.
We like to say that it happens from the nursery to the nursing home. It mm-hmm. really does. We've had people come to us and say they've bought the materials for their daughters, and they're like, thank you so much. This is so helpful. And I have to tell you, I use it at work. We've had people tell us, I use it. One woman said she goes to visit her elderly aunt in the nursing home. She takes the material. She's used it there with her because some of the same things go on at lunch. At, you know, mealtime that happened with younger girls. We actually have been doing some training in the workplace arena, relational aggression in the workplace or workplace bullying. And there are some organizations now, companies who are bringing us in, and we're doing training. And it's the same, basically it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just back to your point about it happens in the workplace. And the training is the same on learning how to speak up for yourself, learning the different strategies and choosing what to do.
There is something new in the world of bullying, and of course that's the internet, and now bullying can continue far beyond the boundaries where it used to live and thrive. But do you have any special tips for dealing with cyberbullying?
I do. One of the things about cyberbullying that I've found out that kids do is they're afraid to tell their parents. So tip number one would be as open with your kids as possible, because when cyberbullying does start, kids probably have been somewhere on the net where they're not supposed to be, and then it gets out of hand. So if that happens to your child, don't rail against them. Be there as a helper. So that's one about the internet. The second one is, there's an exceedingly wonderful YouTube out there. It's called Talent Show, and it's about a minute and a half long, and it shows somebody talking in front of a whole group of people running one girl down. It happens to be about cyberbullying. If you just went on YouTube and said bullying talent show, that would bring it home what that's like. The last one, if you have toothpaste, squeeze it out of the tube. Tell them, put the words back in. You can't get them back in.
And once it's in written form and you've typed it, it's out.
And rule of thumb is if you don't want it, if you wouldn't say it in front of mom, don't put it on the internet.
Well, thank you both so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Oh, thank you.
Jane Ballvance and Blair Wagner, they are the founders of the organization A Way Through. You can find out more information about their organization on the website, awaythrough.com. We're going to continue our conversation about female bullying, relational aggression in a moment. We're going to focus on forgiveness. We'd love to hear your experiences. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about female bullying, a very common problem and a specific kind of bullying that can cause a lot of problems for young girls and for women throughout their lives. We're going to change our focus a little bit right now. My next guest is Suzanne Friedman. She's an associate professor of educational psychology and foundations at the University of Northern Iowa, and her focus is on forgiveness. And Suzanne, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, my pleasure, Charity.
Now, when people think about bullying and talk about bullying, forgiveness is really usually the last thing that people start thinking about. Why do you think it's important to focus on forgiveness?
Well, I think forgiveness can be very helpful for the victim who's been bullied. I think that anger is destructive in the long run, that people cannot live with anger and feelings of hatred and resentment. And I don't think that forgiveness is the first thing that a person wants to hear after they've been bullied. But there's a lot of misconceptions about what forgiveness is and isn't. We have a 20-unit model for the forgiveness process, and anger is the second step. So I think kids need to hear that they have a right to be angry about what happened to them. It wasn't fair. It hurt them, and a chance to express that anger, but then also an opportunity to move beyond their anger.
What kinds of things can being angry and holding on to anger do to a child?
Oh, well, anger turns inward, especially for females, turns into depression, guilt, anxiety, low self-esteem, affects your relationships with other people, stress. It could have physical effects on the individual in terms of high blood pressure. I mean, so there's lots of negative consequences about being angry. You're so consumed with your anger that you can't focus on your homework, doing things in the house for your parents. So there's a lot of negative consequences of being angry.
It can also lead to retaliation.
Definitely. And some of the steps in the forgiveness process, I think, are really critical for the idea of moving beyond bullying. After one makes the decision that they're interested in forgiving, that it's something they'd like to try, is a step of reframing or taking the perspective of the other person, which leads to feeling empathy. And if you could take the perspective of someone else and realize why they did what they did, not to make excuses, but it better leads to feelings of empathy and compassion. And I didn't hear everything that your prior guest said, but I think that can be really important to help decrease the bullying that we see occurring with greater intensity and frequency, is that zero tolerance is good. You have to have zero tolerance. Kids need to know that bullying will not be tolerated. But to get to zero tolerance, I think we have to help kids recognize the humanity in each other, that they're not just bullying some girl. they're bullying a person just like they are. They need to be able to take the perspective of the kid who maybe doesn't have the fancy jeans or the right jacket and understand why. What's that person's life like? And then they could see them as a human being and begin to feel empathy and not just as a girl with a name, with a label. So I think the forgiveness process can go both ways, in that some of the steps in the process can help the bully realize that my actions have long-lasting consequences, like the other guest said about the toothpaste. Once words are out there, they can't be taken back.
When you go into a classroom, and whether it's a classroom of children or a classroom of adults, and you try to do exercises to help them be empathetic, I think a lot of us think about as empathy as something that you have or you don't have. Mm-hmm. How do you teach somebody to be empathetic?
Oh, I think you could help a person be empathetic. I do think it's something that parents have, you know, a great influence on. If kids grow up seeing their parents treat other people as less than, as not as important, as I'm better than you, then they can learn that they have that right to do that as well, that other people are inferior. I'm better than you because I do have fancy jeans and I've got the right clothes and I'm going to the right summer camp and you're not. So I do think that parents are a great influence, but I think a lot has to do with when you go in a classroom, helping kids see beyond the labels that we're so quick to. We look at someone and we judge them on their appearance or what we know by them. There's a great, I don't know if you're familiar with the Challenge Day video and exercise, and it starts having kids have real conversations about each other, and they start off saying, you might not know. So you might not know that my father's an alcoholic, or you might not know that my mom works two jobs so I can go to dance. And it's just like, if you look at me, you won't know this about me, but if you have a conversation with me, you might. And the idea is not to get everybody to be best friends, because that's not realistic, right? But if you know a little something about a person, maybe you'll say hi to them in the hallway. Maybe you won't tease them, name call them, isolate them, or exclude them, because you see them as a real person with some similarities in yourself. So I think it's helping people look beyond the labels. I was reading an article about how a teacher gets kids to see that, and they, as an introductory icebreaker in a classroom, and the teacher said, jot down a list of descriptors of yourself, words that describe who you are. And kids would write down cool, jock, skater. And then the teacher said, pair up with someone you don't know and describe yourself, but don't use any of the words on your paper. Okay, just making the kids would get upset, like that's not fair, but it's kind of like describe in a different way than the labels that you usually use. And I think one way you can get kids to develop empathy is by helping them expand their perspective of someone else, of who that person is, not just by the label.
Now, of course, teaching people to have empathy, if everyone would think of that first, then we wouldn't have the problems that we have with bullying. But of course, we do have those problems, and people don't always think of that first. So when you're dealing with a situation where there has been bullying, or the kinds of experiences that we were talking about earlier on the show, where a friend turns against someone mm-hmm. else, what steps can you walk a child through to help them get past it?
I think it's important that you tell your child that they can express their feelings. I think as adults, as parents, we hate to see our children upset, so we often gloss over their real feelings. Like, it's okay, you're going to get another friend. Don't be upset about that. They're not worth your time. And that's important to do eventually, because you don't want your kids getting stuck in their sadness or their anger. But you have to validate their feelings that hurts. Let them know that they have a right to be upset, because that teaches them that they can express their feelings, that this is a real thing that happened to them. But then you also have to teach them to move beyond. And I had a friend who told me this happened to her daughter. Her daughter was 9-year-old. There was a group of three kids, and they all used to be great friends. And then two of the friends buddied up more, and they started excluding her daughter. And so she was able to, you know, work it through the daughter's feelings. But then I think I heard your other guest say, move on, find other friends, move beyond them. And her daughter did that. Helped her develop activities, get busy in something else, find a different group of girls to hang out with or invite over her house. And then one of the girls, the other friend, called up one night and wanting the daughter to sleep over, and the mom was like, she's busy and she's got plans. I mean, she was a little protective of her daughter, too. She didn't want her getting right back in that. Didn't think that was a good idea. So it depending on the age of the child, like a 9-year-old, you might have to help them navigate to find other friendships, to find other girls. And tell them that's it's normal. And you could help your daughter with the anger and with the forgiveness. Take the perspective. Why do you think they're doing that? Why do you think that they're leaving you out? Or what is it? And you don't always know. It's not always about they're angry at you. It really has nothing to do with the girl who's being left out. It's more about wanting power, status. It's really nothing about the girl, and helping them realize that is important.
So with a scenario like that one, where does forgiveness come in? Because honestly, I went through exactly that kind of situation when I was in fifth grade. I had my best friend. She laid it out. So she told me that she wanted to become popular, and she thought that if we both got our ears pierced and we bought Guess jeans, that we could become popular. And I said I wasn't interested in this. And so she decided that I was holding her back and proceeded to do the things that she wanted to do, but also tell everyone in the school horrible things about me. And so, you know, for 2 full years, there wasn't anywhere for me to go. I was very lonely, but junior high happened and I moved on and I made friends and I was fine. But you know, where does forgiveness come in that scenario? Because you survive it. And then you make your life better. You
exactly.
Look in different
yes.
directions. Why would forgiving this person be an important part of that?
Great question. One of the hardest things to forgive is acts of hurt or an offense when it's still occurring. So for 2 years, your ex-friend was spreading rumors about you. That's going to be hard to forgive mm-hmm. when it's still happening. So I wouldn't suggest that you actually try to forgive her. But later on, right now, how do you feel when you think about your friend?
I still actually interact with her. She was in my same social circle, and she's on my Facebook social circle. But
okay.
I never let myself get close to her again. So while I don't actually actively dislike her. I always think of this. You know, we've never talked it out. Maybe she doesn't even know what she did, but you know.
It sounds like it still stings a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think you know, I've talked to a lot of friends who went through similar things, and a lot of us hold on to those bad feelings.
Right. And that's what they say. That's one of the things about talking to kids about the consequences of bullying, that it's you say this about someone else, you do this, and it stays with them mm-hmm. for a long time. There's a book, Please Stop Laughing at Me by Jody Blanco, and she suffered extreme abuse and bullying by her friends. And now she wrote another book, Please Stop Laughing at Us, about her efforts to help kids. Why is forgiveness important? Because so you have a right to get angry. You realize life is not fair. I mean, I'm not going through all the steps in the process, just a few mm-hmm. of the big ones. But sometimes people like yourself are hurt by other people and you didn't do anything wrong. You didn't deserve it. Maybe you make a decision rather than hang on to your anger and resentment towards this person. You want to move beyond it. So you decide that you want to you're going to consider forgiveness. You're able to take the perspective. What was with your friend? What messages was she getting at home about being popular? And maybe she didn't mean to hurt you, but she did. Maybe she felt, you know, and there's mixed research about this. Do kids who bully always feel inferior or have low self-esteem? We used to think that. Some are saying, no, they don't. A lot of it is about the messages that monkey see, monkey do, that they see their parents. So it's not always about kids who bully have low self-esteem. But there must have been something going on with her that she wanted to do that to you, to feel better about herself. Then those feelings, if you can not to make excuses for what she did, because you're not saying it wasn't wrong. It is wrong, but gain a better perspective. Maybe that might make you feel more empathic towards her, feel compassion. In the process, this happened a long time ago, but if you were younger and you were forgiving her, you absorb the pain. So you're not taking out what she did to you on someone else. You're still a good friend. You're going to look for people who are more like you. So you absorb the pain, because after you've been hurt, it's easy to lash out on other people. So you say, I'm absorbing the pain so other people don't get hurt. You realize that maybe you've needed forgiveness in the past, that maybe you didn't do what she did, but you might have teased other kids. Maybe other kids have wanted to befriend you and you weren't interested. So you realize that you're not perfect. You've needed other people's forgiveness. You realize the meaning this has had in your life, trying to make sense of it, find meaning in the pain and the suffering and the forgiveness. And through these units, you're hopefully able to let go of the negative thoughts, feelings, and behaviors you have towards this person, behaviors maybe if you're seeing them, and gradually feel more positive. And you don't have to feel a sense of love towards her. It might just be more neutral feelings. But if you're not consumed with the negative thoughts and the negative feelings, and if there was any type of revenge behavior, negative behaviors, then you've reached a place of forgiveness where you could think about it. And it doesn't mean that you might not get angry when you think about it. But you might have a little anger, but it's much less intense. You're not repeating this act in your mind over and over again. It happened to you. You catalog it. You made meaning for it. You're a better friend. You're interested in the topic. You want to help other girls, you know, not do this to their friends, but it's not controlling your life.
So forgiveness doesn't have to be an epiphany moment or a conversation that you have with this person. Forgiveness is a process.
Forgiveness is a process, and there's a lot of misunderstandings that forgiveness means that you reconcile with the person. You might not want to reconcile with this person. If the person, reconciliation is dependent upon two people's actions. The offender coming to you and admitting that he or she was wrong, maybe giving you an apology, assuring you it's not going to happen again. And then the person who was hurt deciding that they would like to get back into a relationship. Forgiveness is something you can do on your own. And definitely an apology makes it easier to forgive, but you don't need an apology to be able to forgive someone. It's because then you'd be stuck. Then you might not be able to forgive, because lots of times people who are hurt never get an apology from their offender. So we don't want to think that you need to get an apology. It makes it easier. But forgiveness is something you can do for yourself to move on, to feel better, to have more positive relationships in the future, so you don't take out your anger and negative feelings on the person who hurt you. And that could be powerful for people who are bullied, who feel like they have no control over a situation. When you're bullied, you're feeling powerless, lacking control. So if you're said, you know what, this is something you can do for you, you don't have to be under that bully's control. You can eventually forgive him or her and move on, make something of your life. You hear often that a lot of people who are bullied from adults saying, this is not going to happen in 2 years. You're going to be beyond this. It doesn't help the individual necessarily right then, but being able to look in the future.
There is life after that.
Yes.
When you work with classes and you teach them these steps and you help them go through these exercises, this sounds excellent in theory. What have you been able to see about putting it into practice? How does it work?
What's interesting is that what students appreciate or enjoy learning about is that, one, I've worked with some at-risk adolescents who've been deeply hurt by peers, family members, is that they don't have to remain angry. And that's such a freeing, that there's an alternative to anger, that they can move beyond their anger. So that's an important step that I hear after feedback. The other step is that the idea of taking the perspective of someone else, because when you're hurt, you have a tendency to think about it just from your perspective. How could they do that to me? But maybe realizing that a person who bullies is being bullied at home. And it doesn't take the pain away, but it helps understand how this could have happened, how the person who's driving down the highway and cuts you off. It's not about them necessarily all the time. It's not personal. It's more about what's happening with the bully. I teach a correspondence class on forgiveness. So through the mail, and a woman was writing about the meaning of reframing, and she just said realizing her coworker wasn't being mean to her on purpose, but that she had a sick kid at home and had to leave that child at home and make the difficult decision of going to work because she didn't have any sick days, helped the coworker realize this isn't about me. She's having a bad day and she's taking it out on me, but maybe I'll be empathic towards her.
So something we can all put into practice on a daily basis.
Exactly.
Suzanne, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me, Charity.
Suzanne Friedman is an associate professor of educational psychology at the University of Northern Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio, a production of Iowa Public Radio News.